and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your host, Marianne Monson. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do, and what have they learned through their creative process? I'm excited to have in the studio with me today author and editor Sally Vandegrift, who works in the field of nonfiction and edits a wide range of projects. Welcome, Sally.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sally, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what brought you to Astoria this weekend?
Oh, gosh. This weekend?
Yes.
This weekend I was here for the fabulous, soon-to-be annual, I hope, the Astoria Writers Conference, which was really, really great. It was especially close to my heart because it focused so much on place and setting, which for me in my writing is something that is very, very important. And to be able to share in thoughts with other writers about the role of setting in the place that I most love writing about was really a treat.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm so glad to have you here and just happy to have you be an honorary Astorian. So tell us a little bit, where did you grow up and how did you find your way to the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, gosh. Well, so I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there was a moment right at the end of high school that my father had the epiphany that we needed to move inland. And we moved to a very small town, and I needed an adventure. So, shortly after high school, I had a friend who was moving to Ashland, Oregon. And I just said, take me with you, please. So I headed to Ashland and lived there for a while. And eventually I made my way to Eugene, where I live now, and got involved with the community there. I used to always say that Eugene was the softest landing place I'd ever had. But I have to say that spending time here in Astoria definitely rivals that by far.
So meaning you immediately felt a sense of community, a sense of home?
I really did. Just so drawn to the people and finding so much kindness and opening doors and opportunities. Just it's kind of magical, really. Mm-hmm. I keep on waiting for that experience. I've been coming up here for, I don't know, just since I started coming up here right before the pandemic, and just do research for the book that I'm working on now. And I keep on expecting the magic to stop, but it just morphs into something new, which is really wonderful.
From the phrase of one of our local musicals, the magic of Astoria is real.
Yeah. It is.
I don't know if you've seen Shanghaied in Astoria.
I have.
Yeah. I love that phrase, and it's absolutely true. So that's wonderful that you felt that in Eugene, and that now as a part-time honorary Astorian, you're feeling that pull here too. So in Eugene, you were or have been involved with a literary arts nonprofit that the Writers Guild has sometimes partnered with and worked with, collaborated with a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about Word Crafters?
Sure. It's wonderful. It's a nonprofit in Eugene that sponsors and creates all this great programming for all ages. We have a great Writers in the Schools program, which I was really fortunate to be a part of. And they will host at their offices in Eugene, they'll host writers' events and a lot of great youth programming as well. They also do a ghost story weekend, which is absolutely fabulous.
Oh my gosh, how fun.
Yeah, it is really a lot of fun. And they started out, I became connected with them when they hosted a writers' conference, and they needed somebody to interview authors for this radio spot that they were going to be doing. And so I'm not really sure how I ended up doing that, because I had never interviewed anybody ever. But
you like to talk and you're really conversational, and so I can see how you'd be great at that.
It really was a wonderful experience. I interviewed Terry Brooks, and also
amazing.
Yeah, it was really a great experience, and also this really wonderful spoken word poet, who we later paired with to do a lot of great in school events that were very impactful. It was
fantastic.
Great.
That's wonderful. And you helped start their Writers in the Schools program, right?
I did.
Crafters.
Yeah, we had a really wonderful opportunity to pair with Literary Arts in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
They mentored us through the whole experience. And at the time, I was an undergrad at U of O, mm-hmm. and going through something that was then called the Kid Tutorial, which is kind of like an MFA program for undergrad.
Uh-huh.
And we put together we got interns from the MFA program and paired with the juvenile detention facility in Eugene. And we brought in students to teach creative writing just right there in there. They have a in-house treatment program called the Phoenix program that is really terrific. And so we did that, and it was a really incredible experience. And then we started putting poets and other writers into different high schools around the region. And
this is amazing.
It was a wonderful experience and an honor, really, to be a part of.
Yeah.
It's so amazing to see what creative writing can do in the life of a young person.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways that you don't feel when you're very young that you only have so much control over your life, and it's easy to not feel heard.
Yes.
And to create that space where you are heard,
yeah.
and your words matter,
mm-hmm.
is so important. And so that was a really great experience getting to do that with Word Crafters.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I became familiar with Word Crafters, you know, here in Astoria with the Writers Guild, but Literary Arts is the literary arts nonprofit working out of Portland that really helped me become aware of the potential of literary arts nonprofit work. And so I was in Portland for a couple decades, and almost every year went to their, well, I used to call it Wordstock. That's the old name, and I love that name, but it's now Portland Book Festival, which I think is the first weekend every November.
Yeah.
And then also, it's coming right up. And then they also do an incredible arts and lecture series.
Yes.
I saw Ursula K. Le Guin speak there. I saw Maya Angelou speak there. I saw just so many incredible writers.
They offer a lot of really great high caliber classes for adult education too. During the pandemic, I did like a 9-month novel intensive through Literary Arts that was fabulous. I was kind of at that crossroads where I was like, am I going to go back to school for an MFA?
Yeah.
And what I really just wanted was other talented writers that I could workshop with and mm-hmm. really get the feedback that I needed. And it provided that. It was really great.
Wonderful. Yeah. So a lot of wonderful resources in our state that I hope people will check out. Will you say Word Crafters website? I'm sure you know it.
I think it's just wordcrafters.org.
Okay.
You know, if you Google Word Crafters in Eugene, you're going to get us.
Yeah. And Literary Arts, I'm pretty sure, is literaryarts.org.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they do. They have a lot of fabulous programming. They have an extensive writer in the schools program, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. It's very robust.
Yeah. And fun fact, Portland Book Festival in which year was that? 2016? 15? It's where I first met poet Jericho Brown and talked him into coming out to Astoria before he won the Pulitzer Prize, which worked out super well for us to be able to have him in 2021. So,
what a great experience.
Yeah. So yay for Portland Book Festival. Anyway, yeah. So, well, thank you for the work that you're doing in that good corner of the state. And we're so happy to have you as an honorary historian. So
thank you so much.
So let's move to a little bit of your writing journey. Like what were the books that inspired you early, and when did you decide you wanted to become a writer?
Oh gosh. You know, I think like so many writers, from the moment I could read, I was just compelled by stories, just like so many people. I was that kid with the flashlight underneath the covers, getting in trouble for staying up too late, you know. But it was so funny because I think in the California school system, and I think also this is true here, mm-hmm. around fourth grade, when they're teaching kids about how story works, mm-hmm. there's a school project where you write a book, you mm-hmm. know, and like it's, you write this story and it's, you know, you put it out on your desk during parent teacher night.
Like you staple the edges together right, with construction. Yeah. I still have mine because I was in California in grade school and I still have that book that I made.
Yeah. And I love a good spooky story and I love, anything that involves a big old house. And apparently, like, that genre has not changed for me. My first book was The Mysterious Disappearance of Daisy and Bobby. I think I still have it somewhere. But yeah, I think I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. I didn't really know what that meant. But, mm-hmm. you know, you discover that over time. You just... But my first mode... of interfacing with writing has always been like teaching and coaching and things like that. That's part of what I did at WordCrafters mm-hmm. and then like later as an editor. Mm-hmm. Writing is a very solitary endeavor.
Yes.
You know,
solitary and sullen craft, Carl yeah. Marlantes said this weekend.
Yeah, it's really true. And, it can be hard to find community when you're in the midst of that. Mm-hmm. And I always really liked analyzing people's drafts and finding out what really made it sing. Mm. And so it was a natural progression that led me to editing. Mm-hmm. And I had some very good mentorship along the way, too. Mm-hmm. And I really love doing that work because as a writer myself, I can really appreciate what goes into getting things on the page, you know?
And yeah.
So
I think the best editors are also writers, don't yeah. you think? Because otherwise, yeah, you would have this sort of removed sense without an awareness of the true costs involved.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, if you want to have a good relationship with your editor and know that they have a sense of what you're trying to bring to the page, because, you know, any author who has ever gone through those edits and seen that markup, you know, it can be a very painful process.
Yes.
And you need to really be able to trust that your editor has your best interest at heart and mm-hmm. understands your vision and
yeah.
wants your prose to really sing.
Right.
So
if you put a bunch of authors in a room, it's inevitable that they're going to start talking about how much they hate their editors, right? Or hate certain editors they've worked with in the past.
Yeah, that's, well, yeah, it's
their horror stories.
Yeah, finding a good fit can yeah. be a real journey.
And yeah.
So,
but know. Trusting someone with your creative work, right? And
yeah.
and I think... you know, we've talked about how my first career was in editing right out of college with my undergrad. I wanted to be a novelist, a historical fiction novelist, but guess what? I couldn't find a job that was like, we want a novelist.
Yeah. Didn't turn up in the Craigslist ads.
It didn't. So I thought, well, I guess I'll go work in publishing and see if I can figure this industry out a little bit, which mm-hmm. was a wonderful place for yeah. me as an aspiring writer. But, you know, I think being trusted with people's creative work, like that's a heavy weight, and people can sort of come at it from so many different angles, right?
Yeah.
And what I think I really want as a writer myself is an editor who recognizes that it's my creative project and wants it to be the best version that is authentic to me and my vision,
yeah.
you know, that is
that
possible.
That can be really tricky too, because, you know, in traditional publishing models, the first point of concern is marketability.
Yep.
And, yeah. And often that leads to a lot of different choices than
yes.
maybe you would want to make.
Yes.
And
it's so true. But I think that, you know, it's humbling. And sometimes when people say, well, what is going to happen to my vision? You know, I try to say, hopefully it will just get better and become larger and expanded. Like, I think when the collaboration process is working well, mm-hmm. it, you know, even though there's only one author's name on the front of a book, every book is a true collaboration, you know, if it's published traditionally. And that's actually maybe the biggest difference between self-publishing and traditional publishing. One of the biggest differences is that if it's self-published, yeah, you get to have entirely you, but it's limited to entirely you, you know, like my books are so much stronger. My traditionally published books are so much stronger for the editorial hand and collaboration, as well as the designer, as well as the, you know, the cover artist. So,
Well, thankfully, I mean, there are a lot of publishing is changing a lot.
Yes.
Especially beginning, you know, during the pandemic and everything, there were a lot of new models that were gaining strength and everything. And there's a lot of great new options, or not so new options that just haven't been explored as much. Self-publishing assist. There are a lot of good companies out there now where you have a whole suite of services that you would normally get in traditional publishing, but you get all the creative control. You know, I work with a company now that does a lot of that, and it's really an honor to be a part of that. And you know, to work with a bunch of talented women who, you know, have these incredible skills and can help people who want to self-publish realize their vision and still have creative control, but really get a book that can compete in the marketplace.
Yeah.
You know, which is nice.
That is. That's really exciting. What's the name of that organization?
So I'm working for a publisher called Luminary Press right now.
Okay.
And they're one of, you know, a few really great companies out there that help people to self-publish and make really beautiful books that can hold their own. And it's a fun thing to be a part of, for sure. It's definitely caused me to grow a lot as an editor, you know, and to be able to interface with, we publish a lot of different things, anything from like children's fiction to memoirs to nonfiction, and to have the experience of, in my role as a managing editor, I have to really look for other editors who have different skill sets and can meet the author where they're at and understand, you know, what their book needs. It's so exciting. I mean, there's so many talented people out there, you know. It's like, I just hired an editor that like also knows everything there is to know about editing medical journals and also wine journals.
Wow. It's like,
what a specialty to have on hand. You know?
Amazing. So for those of you who are just joining us, this is Marianne Monson for KMUN's River Writers, sponsored by the Writers Guild. And this morning I am speaking with author and editor Sally Vandegrift. Sally, I want to get to your own writing, but could you just give us a quick overview of what would you say your editorial philosophy is? Like, what is your philosophy as an editor?
Oh, boy. Oh, gosh. I don't know if I've ever been asked that. I would say it's really important to make every word count. You know, we all have heard as writers about Chekhov's gun. And, you know, if it shows up on the mantle, it needs to go off at some point. You know? And it's really, I think, important to, you know, don't say in 2 paragraphs what you could say in 5 words. You know, you'll get so much more mileage on the story that you're writing. And the other thing is that write the book you want to write. That seems like a no-brainer.
No, I don't. I think that's actually not a no-brainer.
Well, so many people, I think, they go in with a lot of anxiety about, like, will people like it? Is it going to sell? Or, you know, if they're writing nonfiction and there are real life people in it, you know. I mean, obviously, you have to be careful about some things, but say what you really want to say. Write the book that you want to write. If it's got, like, dragons in it, great. If it's got, you know, whatever. It's like, just because, for one thing, like, you're either not going to get to the end of the book if you're not writing what you really want to write, or you're not going to, it's not going to come through the way you want it to, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. And as you were saying that, I was thinking about Carl Marlantes talking this weekend about believing in Matterhorn for 35 years.
I found that very heartening.
Oh, yeah. Right? For all of us. And I remember he told me ahead of time, he's like, I'm not sure if this is inspiring or depressing. And I'm like, no, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, it's so helpful to know that this book was in your heart. It was in your soul. It came from his immediate experience. And for so many years, like, did you know he had editors tell him, well, if you could just set this in Afghanistan instead, then we can sell this.
Right.
Can you imagine if he had done that? If he'd listened to them, you know?
Yeah.
And then during Iraq, they were like, well, why don't you just move it to the desert and have it be in Iraq?
Right.
What if he had listened to that?
Yeah.
Like
we wouldn't have the book that we have
now.
We
wouldn't have Matterhorn.
Yeah.
That book was just life changing for me. And, you know, I mean,
I was
what
very
a loss.
Heartened by how he gave it the time that he needed to give it to get it where he wanted it to go.
Totally. Know? And that's so scary as a creator. You're like, am I gonna die before it's done? Is it never gonna be done? You know, am I gonna anyway, but that's so beautiful. I love how you phrased that, to write what you really want to write. It's so easy to go to conferences and think, well, this is selling, like I could go that direction, I could do this, you know, but there's such a power in tuning into what does your soul want to be writing?
And
then you write the book that only you can write.
Right. And life is short. Why do it if you're not going to be doing what you love?
Right.
You know?
Yes. Very well said. Okay. Speaking of, tell us about what you love to write and what are, tell us about your work.
So I'm working on a novel right now that I first started writing it. It started out as a nonfiction project. I live in a very old house that has a really layered past, and I was kind of exploring some of that and came across a very, very spooky story.
Mm.
And after doing a lot of interviews, and there are some answers that you're never going to come up with as hard as you try. And when you're writing nonfiction, sometimes that's not a very satisfying ending. And I got really stuck. So I put it in a drawer and I kind of forgot about it for a while. And really serendipitously, I had teenage boys that weren't going to want to hang out with us for too long. And so we started doing these weekends where we just go explore someplace we'd never been before. And one Sunday afternoon in October in 2018, we ended up going to Astoria. And I'd never been here before, and I thought it was really incredible. And then I couldn't stop. I went home, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And then I started thinking about that old story in the drawer. It just sort of crept in here and there, and it started morphing into something different. But I'd never found that it quite fit in Eugene. It just didn't feel like it belonged there. And one February, I was like, I think I just need to go back up there and see how it feels. I'm gonna write a little bit. I'm gonna recast this and see if it feels like it belongs here. And as it turned out, it was Fisher Poets Weekend. I had never heard of Fisher Poets. I didn't know. I was like, what is this? It's magical. And completely fell in love. I also saw the Harry Flavel house sitting up on a bluff. And I was like, what is this? And I started to discover that the characters in the book that I was writing before, and some of the characters, some of the creepy characters around here, there was some overlap thematically. And so I started feeling things out and coming up here. And pretty soon my project started morphing into a very different story that very much belongs here.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. During the pandemic, of course, I couldn't be up here. So, I ended up watching a lot of drone footage of Astoria. and serendipitously, too, I keep using that word, but it's really appropriate. You know, I don't know if you do this, but when I'm writing, I do certain things to immediately kind of like get into the zone of my book, because life is busy and time is at a premium. So like, I just need to get into it right now.
Yeah.
So I'll listen to the same music every time.
I was going to say music does that for me, especially with the opera sisters, you know, it's really easy to have period music.
Yeah,
but
that makes a lot of
sense. Yeah. There's something about that music that just like centers you.
Yeah. So I would have certain pictures up of places in Astoria.
Yeah.
And I would listen. I had this playlist. And one day I was driving down the road and public radio was on and this song came on and I was like, oh, that song is so right. Who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked them up and then I like added a few of their songs to my playlist. And one day I put them on YouTube and I happened to look up from writing and I was like, I recognize that place. And it was Blind Pilot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Their music is so centered in Astoria.
Yes. But I never knew that when I put them on my playlist that they were from here.
Yeah.
And so it was very confirming to me that like I was heading in the right direction, you know?
Absolutely.
And, so
whenever I'm away from Astoria and I miss it, I turn on Blind Pilot.
Yeah. It feels like here.
you know, Big Red is like where they kind of started. So, I mean, literally their music just arises from the river.
Yeah.
So I think you feel that.
And it's great because, you know, the house that I'm writing about, my main character spends a lot of time looking out the windows at the river, and that's part of that view that she sees. You know?
Which is such an amazing view we have right here at KMUN, too. Another beautiful old semi-creepy house that looks over the river.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure to see that. I had never been in here before, so it was really neat.
Yeah, this studio space is fantastic. So you are working on a novel and you also write nonfiction. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about your nonfiction work?
Yeah. occasionally I write essays. During the pandemic, I wrote an essay called Not a Pet Person, because I'm not, but, during the pandemic, I had a visitation of crows and they left me some very unexpected gifts.
Yeah.
that you be careful what you ask for, you know, like anybody who thinks, oh gosh, wouldn't it be so cool if like a crow brought me something real shiny. You don't always know what they're going to bring you. And sometimes it's pretty creepy, but
this sounds like quite a story in and of itself. I hope you're writing.
Yeah, I published
that.
It in Minding Nature Journal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us the name of it and where we can find it.
It's called Not a Pet Person.
Okay.
And it was published in Minding Nature Journal. And I think it's available online. So if you Google Sally Vandegrift, Not a Pet Person, you'll definitely come up with it.
Great.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun crow adventures on our walks and in our yard. And they're interesting creatures.
They're amazing creatures. They're like left out over from some other time, you know? There was one on the shores of the beautiful lake up in Olympic National Park that I saw one time. And it was so transporting, you know? It like totally took me to another century.
Yeah, they're very wise. University of Washington has done some amazing studies on corvid behavior. And
really?
Yeah, it's totally, I did a lot of research into that when I was writing Not a Pet Person. And, you know, they have face recognition.
Wow.
And so, you know, be kind to the crows or they'll remember.
Final last words, be kind to the crows. And write what your soul wants you to write.
Right.
Exactly. Sally, it's been amazing to sit down and talk with you today. I feel like we just scratched the surface, but thank you so much for that conversation and for all of your insights about writing, editing, and literary arts programming.
It was such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm Marianne Monson for River Writers.